Hello and welcome to this podcast with your host, Paul Miller. Today I talk with Richard Stirling of the Cabinet Office. The Cabinet Office is part of the UK government and, amongst other things, has been responsible for the development of data.gov.uk. We talk about some of the progress on this site, which launched earlier this year. For more information on this show and others in this series, please see the show notes on our website. Thank you. Richard, thank you very much for joining me for this podcast today. Before we get into some of the detail around data.gov.uk and progress to date, can you tell listeners a bit about yourself and your own background, please?
Yes, so I'm Richard Stirling. I work at the Cabinet Office on data.gov.uk. I head up the team there looking at building the site, and I've been doing some work on the transparency board and the new public data transparency principles that they've just issued.
Excellent, and I'm sure we'll dig into some of that in a moment. Now, data.gov.uk, I'm sure almost everybody who's listening has probably heard of it. Almost everybody who's listening is probably aware that it's a big bucket of sort of government-y data stuff. That's all very well, but what's the point? How does government in the current economic situation manage to devote money to this instead of to something else? What's the government driver behind it?
Okay, so the government is very committed to transparency and to opening up its non-personal information. It's doing that largely for three reasons. One is that as government, we all ultimately work for the British people, and the Prime Minister has been using this phrase of, you know, thinking, well, if we all work for the British people, how many organisations would say to the boss, no, I'm afraid you can't look at the books, say to the boss, no, I'm afraid you can't see who's working for you. And that's something that we need to work with. And you can see some progress towards solving those problems in that, in even the short time that the government's been in place looking at this. So we have published a list of all those civil servants who are earning more than £150,000. We have published some very challenging data around MRSA rates for every hospital in the country. And we've also published the Treasury's view of public finances and where we spend public money. So that's that sort of transparency and accountability angle is a very key part of it. There's also a part which is around enabling other people to help build better public services. So that's almost the sort of My Society style web innovation, social innovation. And obviously that can't happen if we lock up our data and our sort of interfaces into government. And the final one is because for some data, actually, as you open it up, so new commercial uses are found. So this helps support commercial innovation, commercial and economic growth. That's something we've seen most interest in around some of the sort of geospatial information that's been opened up.
Okay, so one of the earliest examples here was the Ordnance Survey data, which previously had been quite expensive for companies to gain access to. But now some of that data at least is freely available for people to build new services upon. And part of the argument there, I think, is that actually we get more back in tax from the revenue of those new products than we would from simply charging for access to the basic data.
Precisely. And the Ordnance Survey has done some fantastic work in opening up its data, both in terms of simplifying the licensing for its commercial services, but also OS Open Data, which if any of your listeners haven't had a look at, it's fantastic stuff. OS Vector Map District is an amazing resource.
Okay, and I'll include a link to the OS data in the show notes so people can take a look for themselves.
Thank you.
Now, in the UK, we have sort of these different levels of government. There's national government, where you sit. Then there's assorted non-departmental bodies, sort of at one remove. And then there's local government down at the community level. Most of the high-profile work in this space has definitely been in the central government space. It's been Whitehall and big government departments. To what extent does it extend to those non-departmental bodies and down to local government?
Right, so the Public Sector Transparency Board is looking at transparency for the whole of public services and the whole of the public sector. So in relation to local data and local authorities, then it's working very closely with the local public data panel, which Professor Nigel Chabot chairs, and he also sits on our transparency board. So that's roughly how we're moving everyone in the same direction.
And can the centre, can the Cabinet Office where you sit, insist as it can with central government, or is it more a process of cajoling, bribing, persuading, bullying to get people to come on board?
Oh, I think we're all pulling in the same direction. So this fortunate that we don't need to do any of this.
Well, that's good to hear. So there's clear interest at the local level as well, then?
There is. There's clear interest at local level. I have very good working relationships with people in the LGA and SOCTIM and communities and local government, and in IDEA as well. And you can see there is a growing number of local authorities who are opening up their data and indeed licensing it under the data.gov.uk licenses.
Now, you mentioned the license there. That's been quite an important aspect of this as well, hasn't it? What does that license permit, and how is it a change from what went before?
So, as you say, the license is crucial, because ultimately, I mean, we can have all the data in the world, but under a very restrictive license, and nobody would want to use it. So the National Archives have been doing a lot of work over the last 12 months to look at how we can license government data, what the most simple license that we could put the data under is, and how to represent that. We've been looking for something which preserves the attribution of the on the data, because at the moment that's the best way we have for representing the provenance and saying, you know, what is it that separates this data from other data? This data was produced by the government, and that carries with it some sort of sense of how of quality provenance. It's also important for us to be able to sort of get a feel for where people are using our data and how useful it's been and whether we should do more of this. So the National Archives have been looking at that, and we've got something that's very similar to Creative Commons attribution being trialled on data.gov.uk at the moment. So people can take the data that's on data.gov.uk, mix it with other data sets, and then license that derivative work under Creative Commons attribution. And very consciously, that allows for the free reuse of the data for both commercial and non-commercial use. Because, you know, going back to earlier, why is it we're doing this? We're doing this to try and facilitate either civil society-type applications, those that sort of provide a public good, but also those that are taking the data and making a new commercial business on top of it. So we want to make that as easy as possible. So if you have a look at the sort of test or beta license that's on data.gov.uk, we think that facilitates that. It says you can take the data, you can use it, you can reuse it, you can build things with it. Those things can be commercial or non-commercial. But all you need to do to make sure you don't change the data, so you don't sort of turn one number into a different number and still claim it's the same data set, And you must say that this is government data so that people can understand the sort of quality of what's been done.
So you said that the license you've developed is like the Creative Commons Attribution License. Why didn't you just use that?
There are some very complicated technical reasons why we can't, why we've chosen not to just use the Creative Commons Attribution License. One of them is that Crown Copyright operates in England and Wales and also Scotland, whereas there is no UK version of Creative Commons Attribution. The other is database rights, whereas the licenses on data.gov.uk deals with database rights and puts them on roughly the same footing as the other data, the other rights. Creative Commons doesn't deal with those database rights at the moment, so it couldn't just be, you know, this is all CC BY.
Right. Okay. And the way in which others have solved the database rights problem is to use different licenses, like, for example, CC0 or the Open Data Commons licenses, but presumably you can't use them because they require essentially granting the data to the public domain, which means that there are no strings attached in its use. So I could, for example, download a Treasury data set, change some of the figures, and try and pass it off as still being Treasury data.
That's precisely what the consideration, yes.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you. So, Treasury data then, just to pick one at random, one of the large data sets that was made available recently is this coins database that you mentioned earlier on. That was quite a bold step, wasn't it? You know, all of the financial transactions of government must have been quite scary for some people.
You're right. It is an incredibly bold step and a real sort of statement of intent, I think, from this administration. But it's just to be clear, it's not quite every financial transaction in government, although it'd be wonderful if it was. It's the sort of Treasury view of public sector spending. So there is a level of detail that's not in that. And there, it doesn't quite cover the whole of the public sector. It's largely central government. But yeah, it's an amazing resource and database. It's also a great example of how we are not letting the perfect be the enemy of the good. It would have taken some time for us to tidy up the file from the sort of raw database dump that it is at the moment on the site. And we took the view that actually what we had with that raw database dump was valuable and was useful. It wasn't going to be useful for absolutely everybody, but there would be people who would be able to do things with it at that stage, and we should let them do that. So when we released it within 24 hours, roughly, both The Guardian and the Open Knowledge Foundation had loaded it into different open source products and had started to produce a queryable version of it that the end user could then understand. So you could then go to a website and go, well, okay, so how much money was it that the Cabinet Office spent last year? And you could start drilling into it, which is not something that we would have been able to produce at the same time frame within the system.
Okay. Now, I mean, this is presumably just one example of a number where, you know, big databases that drive a lot of government decision-making are being opened up for scrutiny by third parties for all of the reasons you explained at the beginning. But I think, you know, anyone who's worked with a database within an organisation will understand that there are, you know, caveats and expectations around the data that you come to understand through using it day in and day out. Is it problematic to take a database that's been used by people who understand it and to open it up for sort of third-party scrutiny? Because you get people asking questions that assume things of the data that aren't necessarily true. You know, they look at something and say, that's an awful lot of money to spend on X, Y, or Z without understanding some of the backstory.
Yes, that's definitely one of the challenges, is to try and explain what the assumptions are in collecting the data. and what the implicit assumptions are in the database itself, so that people don't take it and think that they can draw conclusions from it that aren't quite valid. Now, this has been a challenge for government for quite some time. If I were a statistician in the Office for National Statistics, then I would be having the same types of concerns about the statistical releases I put out and whether people understood the accuracy of the methodology and were able to draw sensible conclusions from them. We tried to take some steps to address that. One is through kind of putting just a short 2-3 paragraph description of what the data set is on data.gov.uk alongside the file, and also a link out to more detailed guidance. So in the case of coins, then it links to a treasury page, which then has quite a long in-depth document explaining precisely what the database is and how you can use it, and what kind of things it can tell you. And that's quite a nice model for us, because it enables us to give a level of explanation which is appropriate to the data set. So if it's a really, really small data set, then it could be you need nothing more than a simple one paragraph at the top, this is what it is. In the case of coins, then it may be that what we need to do is we need to link out to a sort of 30-page document saying, well, okay, so this is precisely what you've got in this enormous, great big database of all public spending. So yeah, that's what we're doing. And there's also an ability for members of the sort of community who are using the data to feedback their own insight. So every data set on data.gov.uk has a wiki page that people can feed into and can sort of share their own insights into how to use the data, what's appropriate, how it performs under certain circumstances, even little code snippets for how to incorporate it.
Okay. Now, you mentioned, again, with coins, you mentioned the fact that The Guardian and the Open Knowledge Foundation took the data and massaged it into something that a broader group of users could come and engage with. And again, I'll include links in the show notes to those examples. Is that how you anticipate data.gov.uk continuing to work? Is it the job of someone else to take the data and put a pretty interface on the front of it? Or is that a role that the Cabinet Office might increasingly begin to play for itself?
It's an interesting question. I think what's likely to happen is that for data sets where there is an awful lot of interest, and we can see that there is a lot of interest, and there is a lot of interest in the visualization of it, then I think we'll put more work into doing that sort of web front end. However, if the community has already provided a nice interface into something complicated, then you've really got to ask yourself, is there value in us replicating that? Or should we just showcase what someone else has done? On the sort of former case where we're doing more work to make it easily digestible, then that's one of the reasons for doing a lot of the work on the linked data side. So we've been over the last year, we've done quite a lot of work on linked data to try and take some of the sort of high value data sets and enable them to be queried in a much richer way. And I would, if any of your listeners are interested in that, then I would really encourage them to read Jenny Tennyson's latest blog post on data.gov.uk around, taking the example of education data sets and how we use linked data as a sort of the plumbing underneath to enable people to do either their own Sparkle queries or a sort of, there's an API that sits on top which serves up JSON over a RESTful interface, but sort of underneath it, the reason it works is the linked data underpinning.
That was an awful lot of acronyms in there. Sparkle, JSON, REST. I will include links, as usual, to the Wikipedia page that explains what all these things are. But presumably here again, this isn't the sort of interface you're presenting for my mum, this is an interface for developers like those at The Guardian, the Open Knowledge Foundation and other places, to give them more effective ways of accessing the data to build applications?
It is, but it's also a way for us to build those applications as well if we want to. So to take another example, we recently published some organizational data about the Cabinet Office. Now, we published that as data on data.gov.uk, but at the same time, we want to be able to present that information to the public in a way that is easily digestible when people can see it at a glance. Now, it could be that by publishing that as linked data, you would be able to sort of go through the process to the point where you could create a nice visualization on top of that good information architecture, so that the visualization is driven by the data, and as you update the data, so the visualization changes. Now, that could be a case where there's a sort of business reason for us to be doing the visualization. But as a general rule, what we're really looking for is we're looking for people to take our data, use our data, do amazing things with it, and then ideally share that back through the applications gallery on data.gov.uk.
Okay, that makes sense. Good. Now, you mentioned there sort of exposing this linked data via a set of Sparkle endpoints, where essentially there's an API there. There's also a web page there that people can go and type queries into. I've seen a number of comments, not just in the context of data.gov.uk, essentially sort of complaining about the opaqueness of a Sparkle endpoint. Is there work going on within data.gov.uk to try and help a new developer who may understand Sparkle and may understand how to build a Sparkle query, to help them understand what's in a particular data set so that they know what queries make sense? There's no point asking Edubase, the school's database, for information about shoe sizes of employees. You need to know what sorts of questions make sense to ask.
Absolutely. Yes, that's something that we are putting a lot of time and effort into at the moment, and hopefully people will be able to see the benefits of that over the coming months and the summer as we start sort of showcasing more of our linked data. It's another one of the concerns that I've seen in the community is people sort of almost objecting to having to learn Sparkle queries in the first place, and seeing that as a barrier to the reuse of the information. And that's one of the reasons why one of the things that I'm most happy with on the site of the last month or so has been this generic API that we've been able to roll out, where you can sit an API on top of a Sparkle endpoint, and it serves out something developers are already happy working with. So it just reduces that barrier to entry. And if they then want to go off and do something more, they want to customize the queries that they're running, hands them off to the Sparkle that they were running under the hood without having to worry about it.
Okay, so you're very much sort of holding people's hand and guiding them through. You're not saying Sparkle isn't a solution. You're simply saying that there may be an easier way for certain simple queries, and those simple queries are actually a way to learn about some of the more complex capabilities.
It's all about choice. There are some cases when you want to download the CSV. There are some cases where you want to query the Sparkle endpoint. There are some cases where what you really want is you want a web API that you can just plug into something that you made earlier. What we're looking to do is to make all of those choices work for the end user, particularly for the data sets where you see the most interest.
Okay. Now, there's a lot of data on data.gov.uk at the moment. Most of it, I think I'm right in saying, is essentially sort of static dumps from some other system inside government. Is there work going on to try and close the gap between those internal systems and what data.gov.uk sees so that we're getting more timely refreshes perhaps without placing undue strain on staff within government to keep making those dumps?
There is. It's something we're looking at. One of the things that we've had in our minds almost all the way through the project is not to let the perfect be the enemy of the good, to try where possible to piggyback on the back of existing processes and existing timetables. So for most of the data that we've got on the site, what we've done is we've found people who were already in the business of working up their data for set releases, internal or external, during the year, and then making sure that when that data is released, it's also released onto data.gov.uk, so that we're minimising the burden that we're putting on government in releasing its data. Now, where we've started to see actually quite lots of interest in the data, then we're able to go back to the people in the system and say, well, did you know that you're actually fantastically popular? You're creating this data set that everyone loves. How can we make sure that they're using the most up-to-date data? And we're using that as the end to sort of think about the technical solution of how precisely you do that in a way that doesn't increase their workload.
Okay, good. Now, taking a step back up out of the technical detail for a moment, you've mentioned a couple of times this transparency board, which is quite active at the moment. This is a new sort of a departure. What's it trying to achieve, and how does it fit alongside the data provision?
Okay. So the transparency board is chaired by my Secretary of State, Francis Maud, and has on it Sir Tim Berners-Lee, Professor Rufus Pollock, Professor Nigel Shadbolt, and Tom Steinberg. I'll spare you and your listeners reading out their terms of reference, and but they're up there on data.gov.uk and the blog section if anyone wants to go and have a look at them. But they're, in essence, what they're trying to do is they're trying to open up data across the public sector, and they're looking at various different things. The best way to keep up on top of what they're up to is, as I say, through their blog. There have been various different things posted up there recently, including the minutes of their first meeting. They really do reward reading for those who are interested. The most important thing they've done probably is the draft public data principles that they published on the 25th of June. And that's where they set out what they would like to see on public data policy. And they talk about introducing a right to data, and that it should be available for free and open reuse, including commercial reuse, surfaced through data.gov.uk, that we shouldn't publish in PDF as an exclusive principle. But that's, they've basically taken hold of the agenda and they're running with it.
So is this where the sort of policy drive will come from? Or is it one of many places that are going to drive sort of policy and strategy in this space?
This is where it will be driven from, I think.
Okay, and Francis Maud is Cabinet Office Minister, so it's pretty near the top.
Mm-hmm. And reports into the Prime Minister and Deputy Prime Minister.
Okay, good. That's sounds promising. Now, I realise that you're a civil servant, and I realise that you know, the work of government carries on regardless of who the government happens to be. You know, the king is dead, long live the king, and all that. So you may have difficulty answering this question, but I'm going to try asking it anyway, and see if we can come up with a diplomatic way of answering it. Data.gov.uk was closely associated with the previous administration. And I think there was possibly some concern that it may go away or it may have its focus changed. We've had an election in May. We have a new government. Is it business as usual, or is it a higher priority, a lower priority, or no comment?
Well, as you say, I'm a civil servant. All I can say is that transparency and the things that we've talked about are incredibly sort of key to the coalition. It's something they had in their coalition agreement. It's one of the six things that the Cabinet Office is tasked with delivering. This is a big priority for them.
Okay, and some of the stuff we've seen since the change of government would demonstrate that that certainly appears to be the case.
Absolutely.
Good, thank you. So I'm a developer, or I'm someone who thinks government has some data I might have a use for. How do I get involved?
So there are a number of different ways. The easiest way to get involved is just go to data.gov.uk, have a browse through the data, find something interesting and exciting. We even have a random data set button if you're not feeling inspired. It's the thing that keeps me amused on a Friday afternoon. Have a look at the data. Do something amazing with it and share it back with the community, and ideally share back how you did it as well. That's something we're really trying to work on at the moment, is sharing those sort of tales of how public data can be used, how to build with it, and come to our site, talk about it. Let us know what we could do better. Let us know how we could be more useful, and let other people know, what are those things that really need to be done to make our data useful.
And what are some of those cases, some of those places where someone has taken data and done something amazing with it that stand out for you? You know, if you go home and your mum says, "What have you done today? You know, what have people done with all this data?" What are the examples you would point to?
There are quite a few that I like. I really like the "Where Does My Money Go" visualization. That's not just because I used to work at the Treasury fantastic. But I think it actually takes something that is quite complicated and wasn't widely understood and makes it accessible and makes it so that people can actually get a sort of gut feel for where is it that taxpayers' money is spent by government. But there's also things like Asbarometer, which used our data and made a little iPhone app, or Android app now as well, sort of showing you how safe or otherwise the location you were in was. Jeff is one of the guys who has a guest blog on our site talking about how he found it to work with our data and things that we could do to make his life a bit better.
Sounds good. So a wide and varied range of uses, some of which might have been anticipated and some of which probably weren't.
Absolutely.
Which is just as it should be. Who was it? Was it Tim Berners-Lee or... it was Rufus Pollock, I think, who said, the most interesting use of your data are those you haven't even thought of yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's certainly what we found.
Okay, good. So the programme continues and goes from strength to strength then. You're not going anywhere soon.
Well, I hope not. It's quite fun.
Okay, good. Well, Thank you very much, Richard, for taking the time to talk with me. That's been a useful and interesting update on progress with data.gov.uk. So thank you very much for your time.
Not at all. Thank you very much for having me.
Goodbye.